I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungoyne, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, April 22nd, episode 85. We're going to focus on the Gaza Strip this week. It's one of the most densely populated places on Earth. Over 2 million people live in an area under 400 kilometres squared. For an Irish comparison, that's roughly twice the population of Dublin, living in less than half the size of County Louth. Combine that with a water supply that's largely undrinkable and an electricity supply that is intermittent. Due to the hostile relationship between Israel and the ruling Palestinian Hamas faction, Gaza has been under blockade for over 15 years. The two entrances for people in and out of the Strip, Erez on the Israeli border to the north and Rafah on the Egyptian border to the south, are tightly controlled by those countries respectively. So at the beginning of the COVID crisis, Gaza escaped the worst through being isolated, as you'll hear shortly from Fadi Hanona, a journalist and cameraman who lives on the Strip. Hello. Hi, Fadi, you can hear me, can you?
Hey.
How are you?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm fine, and you?
Yeah, good to talk. The electricity went off, did it?
It went off, but we are waiting the generator to work again, so we will have Wi-Fi, not a credit, because in Gaza we don't have 3G or 4G, we have only 2G, so you can't hear me very well if I'm using my credit to 2G. Okay. So I'm waiting another generator to work from the street. We have in the street generators, and every home take a line from the generator, and we be more for that electricity.
When I called Fadi Hanona earlier, we had to delay the start of our interview due to a power outage. Now bear that in mind. It's important when we're discussing some of the lockdown later on in the interview.
So are you speaking on Wi-Fi at the moment?
Yes, Wi-Fi.
I asked Fadi to take me back to the start of the COVID crisis in Gaza and how numbers on the Strip were controlled by a tight quarantine system at the border crossings with Israel and Egypt. It applied to anyone entering the Strip on the 3 days in the month when that was allowed. It was implemented by the Ministry of Health, the MOH, as Fadi calls it. At the beginning, when COVID was a worry at first, Gaza, because it is blockaded and it was somewhat protected and there was a bit of a lockdown, but how did the virus get into Gaza and how quickly did it spread?
Yeah. At the beginning, when the virus started in China and other countries, the borders was closed from Israel and Egypt. So no one go out from Gaza or back to Gaza, only 3 days every 1 month, you know. And when the COVID started, the government here and MOH in Gaza decided to do quarantine for the people who back to Gaza during these 3 days, you know, every 1 month. And they bought them for 3 weeks.
So 3 weeks quarantine at the Rafah crossing with Egypt and the Erez crossing with Israel.
Exactly. In August 24th, MOH said we have the first cases in Gaza, inside Gaza Strip.
That's the Ministry of Health, is it?
The Minister of Health said that, yes. And this case was in Israel for treatment. She has cancer.
Okay.
And she was in Jerusalem. She went back to Gaza and she did a test. It wasn't positive. She went back to her home. So, yeah. And in 1 week, we recorded 500 cases per day. That's mean.
From August 2020 onwards, cases of COVID-19 began to climb. 819 people died. There are over 18,000 active COVID cases in Gaza and 291 people are in ICU, 69 of them in ventilators. When I talked to him earlier, Fathi was just back from filming in the Al-Aqsa Hospital. Bed shortages, long hours, reduced salaries and tight PPE supplies are putting serious pressure on medical staff, who are also afraid of infecting their own families. This morning you were filming in an intensive care unit for Médecins Sans Frontières. What are the scenes like in the intensive care units in Gaza? How much pressure are they under?
We went to film this morning at the Al-Aqsa Hospital in Gaza City. In Gaza, we have only 5 hospitals, and they are not big. We are using two hospitals for the coronavirus cases. At Al-Aqsa Hospital, we have only 4 beds at our ICU. That's it. And the 20 beds for coronavirus, the serious cases. We are now in the middle of the second wave of coronavirus in Gaza, which is really hard and difficult, more than the first wave. And the situation, what I saw this morning, it's unbelievable, actually. I need to talk first about the health worker here in Gaza, how they are suffering to survive. Because, health system in Gaza already destroyed during the last 3 wars and the Great March of Return, and with more than 12 years under the siege. So the health system in Gaza can't face any emergency situation like COVID or a war, for example, or things like that. No, Gaza can't face that. Health workers, they can protect themselves very well. Here in Gaza, they can also, but they don't have enough equipment, for example.
What kind of equipment are you talking about? Are you talking about PPE, face masks, gowns?
Exactly. I'm talking about the PPE. He allowed to use 1 per day. He can't change it. And this is very difficult for them because they don't have enough. And this cost them a lot, as I heard from the doctors. Also, these doctors, they work with half salary. This is what a doctor told me behind the camera. He told me, look, we are working 24 hours and we have only half of the salary. This is what people in Gaza get. From Palestinian Authority and from Hamas Authority also. They have only half of the salaries. So also they are suffering and they are afraid about their familias.
While filming in the hospital, Fadi saw just how critical the situation is.
Actually, something happened this morning. It was very bad. We start to talk, to follow a doctor who was care about one COVID patient. And then, they decide to take him to the ICU, from the COVID unit to the ICU. Then we start to follow him, and after 5 minutes, he died at the ICU bed. It was unbelievable to see something like that. Beds was really full. When this man died, in 2 minutes only, another person was at his bed.
Conditions in Gaza mean that controlling the spread of the virus is extremely difficult. The Strip's refugee camps are made up of small, crowded, badly built dwellings separated by narrow alleys. Policing a lockdown in this environment is challenging. Social distancing is almost impossible, Fadi says. Nearly 1,200 people tested positive in the last 24 hours as we record this on Thursday, but that's only a fraction of the true level of infection. You'll hear Fadi refer to the Ministry of Health, the MOH statistics here. Can I ask you about testing then? Because the amount of people who are testing positive for COVID in Gaza would suggest that the testing is maybe too limited and that the case numbers are actually much higher than the ones that are being recorded officially.
Yeah, for example, let me talk about numbers. For example, yesterday, MOH did 4,000 tests. We have 1,500 come back positive. 2 days ago, they did 5,000 tests. 2,000 came back positive. It's unbelievable. Let me explain something. Social distance in Gaza, you can't have it. You can't have it. We have 8 big camps in Gaza. Camps mean between each home only half meter, small rooms, small streets. And when you say lockdown, I mean, police can't walk in this street to make sure. We have only one solution now, to have vaccine and everyone get vaccinated in Gaza, or we will face really big problem.
But vaccination is a challenge. According to the latest situation report from the WHO, just over 83,000 vaccines have been delivered to Gaza, 62,000 Sputnik and nearly 10,000 AstraZeneca and nearly 12,000 Pfizer. It's not nearly enough to make a dent in the 2 million population.
We can't, with this numbers of vials, we can't reach 1% of the population here in Gaza. We can't cover it. We are 2 million. What we need, actually, we need a lot of vaccine.
And stories of the risks of vaccines are increasing hesitancy amongst the less educated.
We don't have enough vaccine in Gaza. What we have is Sputnik V now in Gaza and AstraZeneca. Sputnik V, it's almost finished now. We are using AstraZeneca. And there's some people read some bad news about, for example, AstraZeneca. So they are afraid, but we are trying to tell the people, no, don't be afraid from the vaccine.
The contrast with neighbouring Israel couldn't be more striking. In Israel, well over half the population is fully vaccinated, with more having received one jab. Society is opening up and the crisis is well on its way to being over. But there is no sign as of now of any Israeli vaccines being destined for Gaza anytime soon.
We are exporting and material from Gaza to Israel and importing material, food, these things from Israel. No one will be safe until everyone is safe. So they should send vaccine to Gaza.
And what is the reason that you are being given or that people in Gaza understand?
It's political. It's political reason. It's political reason. And this is unbelievable. It's politics affects the health system. No, this is unbelievable. They should forget about the political things and they should support Gaza, support the people, because no one is safe until everyone is safe. We are leaving to Gaza.
There's a lockdown of sorts in place in Gaza as it waits for a supply of vaccines from whatever source. But the lockdown comes at a cost in an area where there is no substantial state support for shuttered businesses or those put out of work by the crisis.
We have COVID, so the authority here decide to do a lockdown. Lockdown means like it's not allowed to work. People here should work day by day to offer food for their families, to offer money, to make money, because we don't have government to pay us money if we stay at home, like Europe. In UK, in any country, people stay at home and government gives them money. But in Gaza, no, we don't have. So we have to work. There's some people I know, they hide that they have coronavirus because they need to work. They have kids.
The pandemic not only induces poverty, it also comes with extra expenses for families.
The budget, the mask, to wear mask, to buy hygiene, to do these things, it's a new budget for our monthly. A lot of poor families in Gaza don't have enough budget to buy smartphones or this kind of smart things, laptop, no.
Now, in the answer you've just heard, Fadi mentions laptops and smartphones amongst the added expenses for families. And this particular form of poverty came into sharp focus when the schools shut. You probably remember the issue about the power outage and its effect on Wi-Fi at the start of this episode. Well, that only added to the problem when it came to trying to provide some continuity in children's education during a lockdown.
So let's talk about education. Education. For example, when you say lockdown, everywhere the education went to be online, right? In Gaza, we can't because we don't have electricity 24 hours. So I have to wait the generators to work in my area, then I will have electricity because I can't use my phone to call you from my credit, because in Gaza, we don't have a 3G or 4G. We have only 2G, which is difficult to have a WhatsApp call or video call or to use internet with 2G. It's a problem for the online education. When you say lockdown, school is will close. So students will start to learn online. And this is what we can't offer for our kids. This is what we can't offer because we don't have electricity 24 hours.
COVID also requires clean water for hand washing. Drinking water is an expense too, as it's not available from taps. Oxfam estimates that only 4% of water in Gaza is drinkable. Ireland supports a solar-powered water purification plant in Gaza, which was visited by the Irish representative to Palestine, Don Sexton, earlier this week.
Many countries are helping, to be honest with you. 2 days ago, I met your ambassador in Palestine, Don, in Gaza, and they are helping with water crisis a lot. But it's still difficult. It's not clear water to drink it and wash it. Wash your hands, for example, a lot of people...
In November 2015, the United Nations estimated that Gaza would be uninhabitable by 2020. That was before anyone added in the impact of a global pandemic. Fadi gives me his personal experience of the effects of the economic destruction on him, his family and their attempts to provide a PET scan and cancer treatment for his father.
After COVID, you know, it's completely destroyed. Let me give you, you know, a sample about me. When the border closed, there's no journalists, no filmmakers arrived Gaza. I spent like 10 months without any job. And not only me, a lot of people like me.
And no job for you is no money.
Exactly. If you are not working, you don't have money. For example, for my father has cancer. His treatment is not available in Gaza. I'm suffering that, trying to send him to Jerusalem every 1 month, and I need to buy some treatment for his, for my father, and without job, you can't do that. In Gaza, can you imagine in Gaza? Can you imagine in Gaza, we don't have PET scan? Doctors asked my father to do PET scan 2 months ago, and until now we don't know what we are going to do because it's not available, and we are waiting the permission. When he got the permission last month, he went to Jerusalem and they told him the machine is not working, it's stopped, so you have to back to Gaza, and we will call you again when the machine is working again. I mean, why we don't have PET scan in Gaza? Why we don't have treatment in Gaza for the cancer patient? It's, look, man, let me say that, to live in Gaza is something no one can stay here. Look, they said in 2020 Gaza will be unbelievable place, right? I'm here on the ground, I can confirm that. Especially now with COVID. You know, it's something more. Yeah, I hope the situation will change soon.
Fadi, look, thank you so much for spending the time and talking to us.
No, you are welcome.
I wish your father all the best. I wish your family all the best.
Thank you.
And that's it for another episode. If you want to get in touch, you can contact me on colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie or @colmomongain on Twitter. Take care. Stay safe. Thanks for listening.